Welcome to the Social Distance Podcast. There's not much cycling on, so we talk about other stuff. Sam has a domestic, and we talk about the future as a single man. Like, share, subscribe.
Let's just run the intro and wing it like we always do and see what comes out of it.
Let's get ready to rumble! Front kick!
Just getting pulled in basketball chat.
My radar's going pretty hard at the moment, I think.
Will you shut up, man?
That escalated quickly.
Oh, we're going to need to get some more qualified guests on the show, eh?
The microphone today. You fucking started by like chewing in my ear. Chewing gum, and now you're just sipping. Oh my god.
Really directional mic, isn't it?
Like, why is it so? It's like one of those, what's that called? Like the H.
ADSR, you know, like, or something.
Yeah, when they're like the lady counting pi.
What about now? Is that better?
1, 4, 5, 6.
Yeah, but it's the opposite. That's not, that stuff's meant to relax you. This puts you on edge. And
feels. Is this worse or better?
Yeah, it's fine.
You're chewing.
Oh my god.
No, the chewing's annoying. It's
really no, it's not annoying. It's infuriating. It's like, it makes me want to.
There's like you got the juiciest bit of Hubba Bubba just rolling.
You know what other noise does that to me? Is the worst noise in the world. Is, you know, you're in the sauna. You're sitting in the sauna, and there's just like that real sweaty guy, and he's just going, and he starts like rubbing himself, and it's just making that like that real disgusting visceral. Actually. Did I tell you about the sauna experience the other day?
No. Oh. You tell us about the gym experience.
No, mate, Caden asked me last night when I was about 6 pints deep, why do you sweat in a sauna? I was just like,
what?
You're asking the wrong person at the wrong time. How do you sweat, or where does it come from, or something?
What?
I was like a real deep question. Like, I was just like, I don't know. she said to me, she's like, this might be a dumb question to you, Bules, but like, where does the sweat come from in the sauna? I'm like, if you think you're dumb, I must be fucking stupid.
Yeah, because you think it's a stupid question, and then you try and answer it, and you're like,
yeah, I was like,
they are. When you think about it, saunas, are pretty filthy places.
Well, this just happened to me the other day, right? Actually, what would you guys do in this situation? If I was at the gym and this old leathery, you know, they're like people that look like they've lived about 5 millimeters away from the sun for the last 10 years, come in long hair, and I'm just sitting there trying to do this like sauna for Tour Down Under, heat adaption and all the stuff.
Have we started the show without us knowing?
Oh yeah, we should have. Yeah, we have. That's good. I hate the intro. So then he comes in, and I'm just sitting there, and I'm like, you're like suffering in a sauna, you can't really say why you're suffering, but you're just suffering. And he just comes in full naked, which, all right, fine, sauna, not too worried. But then he just comes, stand, like, so he's sitting opposite me, and he just puts his leg up on the thing and just starts doing stretches. And I'm sitting there, and it's just fucking dick just penduluming. And he's just stretching his hamstrings, right? And I'm sitting there trying to be calm. And then he just starts doing this one. That noise where he's rubbing his body. And then...
just waiting for the crackling to start to develop.
Yeah, and then I instead of saying something, I did like the worst thing, where I just go the passive aggressive, like, oh, you know, like the passive aggressive noise is just like... But he was just oblivious. And then he starts doing the Thai massage technique where you're like, you know, two hands.
Oh, rubbing your leg.
Like, your leg. Yeah, like chopping board your legs. And he's just making all these noises and then starts doing these. And he was a little bit sick, but he was doing like breathing exercises. Oh. And I just couldn't handle it. And I got home and I was thinking, like, I just thought I was in a, like, you know, I thought, oh, I've just got a low threshold today. So just, let it go, whatever. And then I got home and started telling that story to Caitlin. And then it started annoying me again. I go, why didn't I say something? I just dealt with it.
And this is all stemmed from me annoying you this morning, chewing and making noises through my mic.
What's the sauna, like the global protocol for sauna must be completely different in Europe.
Nah,
like,
there's got to be a global protocol. There is.
There has to
don't
be.
Don't do stretches.
You can't wear pants.
Everyone's naked. Well, we always go naked in Europe. But
like football, if you just walk in, you've got to run a towel.
Yeah, I run a towel over the like a nappy situation with a towel.
Yeah.
But I'm naked, you know. I don't wear togs or undies or whatever. But yeah, you still cover up the area.
Yeah, yeah.
That's protocol.
This guy wasn't.
And you stay seated.
But you stay seated. It's clearly. And you don't make breathing noises and you don't rub your breasts like you're making to make the.
That's.
You certainly don't get the pendulum ADSR swinging. Noises. You do not get the pendulum swinging at any moment. That stays below the towel, under the towel. You do not get the pendulum.
You almost want to run a mangina in there.
I had a mate who was going out with a German girl. And then like he'd only known her a couple of days. I might have told this on the potty a couple of years ago. And they were in Germany and they, like as a family, they went down to the pool and he's like, oh, okay, he's an Aussie guy. And then they go, oh, we're all gonna like have a family sauna. He's like, okay, all in the buff. And like he's sitting there
family sauna.
Like the mum was in the buff, the dad was in the buff. And I said, mate, was that awkward or what? He goes, well, what do you reckon? Yeah, like I've only just met him, and here I am standing across, staring like mum fully starkers. I was like, "Yeah, that's weird." Like, I get the whole embrace nudity and all that sort of stuff. But come on, if you've just met the potential in-laws and you're staring in the boof, it's like that'd be an awkward like dinner that night. I reckon.
Well, I just feel like just it's these images. Then everything's okay from there on. Then nothing's weird after that.
True.
Well, yeah, true.
You'd hate that if your mum was hot. You'd be like, oh.
Oh, yeah.
But also, if you were lacking confidence with your own manlyhood, that'd be awkward. Like, you're sitting there going, oh.
The old man just gets once over.
Stretching and...
Yeah, the old man's
like, breathing exercises.
It's not going to work.
At that point, you'd be like, all right, you've broken protocol now.
Yeah.
Do you think that that's just a power play from the dad, though? Do you think the dad was like, right, running a good operation, and he's like, we're just going to establish dominance early on, everybody naked in the sauna.
Yeah. Or maybe they've got some sort of fetish where they're like, well, let's check him out.
Well, what's the protocol? What's the sauna protocol down in Aussie, Jonesy?
Well, like, yeah, you've got to have a towel. Like, people frown if you don't have a towel for starters. But outside of that, you know, people wear clothes. Like, no one's ever in the buff. Like if you went in the book,
like a t-shirt on, track pants.
Oh no, like you know, you have like speedos or footy shorts.
That's how people That's how people sauna in the South Island of New Zealand. They go
cold down there.
That is like it's also like the early 1900s in the deep South. It's just the most conservative part of New Zealand, and people don't like. It's like basically you go in there with your swan dry on.
But I don't know, like...
I know the Amish sauna. That'd be full coverage, eh?
I don't think the Amish sauna, bro.
they'd make good ones.
Yeah, build them quickly.
So what else is news, boys?
I've got a hangover today, actually. It's the first time in a long time that I've done this show with a hangover. So it's good to be showing the show the respect that it deserves again.
Yeah.
Went out for a few beers last night to watch the All Blacks game. All Blacks versus England. Went to the Irish pub, actually. I haven't been in the Irish pub for a long time to watch live sport. Normally go to bagels and beers in Girona, but he's on holiday. So we went to the Irish, and it was chocker. It was a good vibe in there. A lot of Kiwis.
I had a real bitter taste in my mouth after this. Something horrific. There was a crime committed last night in the rugby game, Jonesy. I don't know if you saw it. Actually, this is an interesting situation, right? So All Blacks were thumping the English. And then we completely shat the bed in the last 20 minutes. They get level with us like 2 minutes to go. And then, or not even, they slot a penalty like 30 seconds to go. Time for one more play. England, New Zealand kick off, English get the ball, 25 all at this point. And instead of trying to win the game, the English fly half just kicks it out, just turns around and kicks it sideways, kicks it out. And then nobody was happy. And even I feel like his own players were just looking at him going, fuck did you do that for?
Mate, even
so nobody, even the English, they didn't try to win. All Blacks were just stunned, like, oh my God, they didn't even try and win.
No. And even the other English players apologised to the All Blacks. Like, sorry, mate. I saw them say, sorry, mate. Like,
so if it's a draw, it's a draw. There's no extra time.
No extra time. It's not a tournament.
But like, when you've got the ball, like, off the kickoff, he catches the ball. In general, the rule is, even though it's over 80 minutes, it's like it's the 81st minute or something, you can play the game until the next stoppage of play. So until the next penalty, the next knock on, whatever. And then the game would stop. So you have, so run it, run the ball. But he just
but I understand that mentality if you're like, right, we just need to secure a ball, a win to, sorry, I'm watching the cricket out the side of my eye here. If you just needed to secure a win to get through to a tournament or you get through to the next stage or win a championship, whatever, I kind of understand it. But when there's no bigger goal at play or no bigger like force at play, it's like...
And you're not winning.
Yeah, and you're not winning.
Like, I can understand if you're winning and you kick the ball out, but you're not winning.
It sounds like a brain fart, like an on-field brain fart.
I think he kicked it out and just went, fuck, what did I do that for?
Yeah. I think he must have thought they were up by one point or something.
Maybe he thought they were up. Imagine that. Imagine if he's just gone, he needs laser eye surgery or something. He's just going, oh, fuck, I thought it was 35-25.
My sporting highlight of the week was Uncle Chen, the Chinese marathon runner who knocked it over in 3.5 hours and chain smoked lung busters the whole run.
Yeah, he smoked a whole pack of darts, in 3 hours 28. That's impressive in itself, let alone running.
Like a 3 hours 28 marathon that's pretty quick, eh? Like we wouldn't run 3:28 off the block.
Nah, that's going. But a lot of fit people try and break 3 hours. Like that's a big thing. Like if I can break 3 hours.
Yeah, I remember
like,
Lance went for it and did like 2:54 or something. Mm-hmm. So and he didn't. How many lung busters did Lance smoke?
Oh, 4 or 5.
Yeah.
See? That's an impressive feat. Just smoking the packet. Imagine sitting down in the lounge with your mate and smoking a packet of lungers in 3.5 hours, a whole pack.
Smoking nowadays, like they're banning it pretty much for most films, TV shows. You know, I think a pack of darts is like $60 in Australia. It's so socially unacceptable. But then to see this guy just pop out of the blue and then you see his time, you go, if there's ever a definition of zero fucks given, it's Uncle Chen.
Like, have you guys ever heard of resistance theory? For me, I actually kind of can see how this has happened, though. It's like the resistance theory. It's like if you're a chain smoker, sure, it damages your lungs, but there's also like your perception of lung fatigue has changed. So it's like same way as like, I'm trying to think of a...
So you reckon his lungs are so cooked that the pain of running the marathon is like, well, I've had worse mornings after...
Exactly.
Two boxes of lung busters. This isn't that bad.
Yeah, it's just basically it's like... They used to smoke ciggies for warm-ups back in the day. Like back in the day, they'd be drinking whiskey in the bottles. Actually, which came around again. And I remember when Etiks were making the gels that had alcohol in them because they were like, they realized like, hold on a minute.
This tastes like speeds up whiskey, those things. Jesus.
Yeah, and then terrible. It's like, and then it's like speeds up the absorption of the alcohol, of the carbs. But I just feel like if you can smoke 28 darts sitting on your couch, running 3.5 hours with or without darts, 3.5 hour marathon, you know, it's just meant like this guy's just a bit tougher. It's a bit more resilience.
And he's clearly trained for the marathon to run 3.5. So, like, was he smoking darts? That must have been part of his training schedule, just smoking darts while you run. Because, he's obviously made a conscious decision to be like, I'm going to smoke darts while I'm running the marathon. Like, he's gone.
Yeah, he's not just like,
he's gone.
He's not just bumming ciggies around the pack.
Yeah. He's made a conscious decision to have a crack at the world record for how many darts can you smoke in a marathon.
And I reckon it's a record that a lot of people just go, oh, I'll leave that one alone. Uncle Chen can have it. Like, I don't think there's going to be many that will put their hands up. Because the process as well is like for him jogging and then once he's finished the dart, like lighting it up again whilst running. Like I think a lot of smokers struggle when they're standing still.
Did you see that guy
who ran? It's hard for us at the moment to pick up, to sort of dissect bike races because there's obviously no bike races happening. So we're just turning to bizarre athletes like Chang. But speaking of left field athletes, or not left field athletes, but left field sponsored athletes, How's we've got a horse in the race at the moment, don't we?
Yeah. Ollie Wood. We'll get him on the show at the end of the series, but he's racing the UCI Track Champions League, which is a four-part series, 4 weekends in a row. Mallorca last weekend, Berlin last night, and then I think there's two in London. Oh, something like that. Probably should know, I suppose. But he won last night, actually, won the scratch race. Got our sponsor.
That's a bit off-brand for us. I feel like that's a little bit off-brand.
Successful. he's got his our logo on the skin suit. So he's a good man, Hollywood. He won the World Team Suit title this year. He's a POM, racing with Great Britain. Was second in the Madison, and now he's kindly put our logo. So we'll be following him. We'll do some posts about him over the next couple of weeks, and we'll get him on the show, I reckon, once the series is over.
So he won the scratch race, because I didn't catch it last night.
Neither did I. There's two races a night.
Okay, and so the scratch race is 20 guys start, or how many guys start?
24.
And it's just first cross line.
Yeah, first cross line. And I think like the world champs scratch race typically is 15K. But I think in this, because it's kind of what you call, I guess, is it's carnival racing. So it's a night of racing, and they have all bunch different events, sprint events. you know, you can get tattoos, piercings, all these sorts of things. It's like a monkey throwing a ball. Yeah. And then there's like a whole bunch of sprint races, endurance races. And it's in one night. So the scratch race last night, I think, is only short, like 7K or something.
But how does that work? Like, I've never always wondered this. If you line up, if you take a lap, you're a whole lap in front.
Yeah, you win.
Do people take laps in scratch races?
Yeah, all the time. So if you...
So then what happens? Are they just coming into the final? There's like three guys that have taken a lap. Does everyone else have to get out of there?
No, because they're racing for the minor placings. So that's where it gets real hectic. So last week they took a lap. The guys that won, so Mark Stewart, he's a Scottish bloke who rides for Black Spoke.
He's pretty Kiwi, isn't he?
Yeah, we'll claim him.
Okay.
He's a good man. He's a good man, so he deserves to be claimed. But he won last weekend. But they took a lap in the scratch race, and I was watching it with Hannah, and I said, oh, they took the lap with one lap to go or something. And I was like,
so they just made contact with the back of the pillow with a lap to go.
Yeah. But my opinion as an onlooker was like, don't take the lap, because all it's going to do is you're going to chuck yourself in the butt in the middle of 24 people. You're going to make the
sprint. Oh, you can stay 300 meters in front or 200 meters in front.
Yeah.
Just flapping off the back.
Yeah, because then you've got a clear run at the sprint.
Yeah, but do you arrange that? How do you arrange it with?
Yeah, you can't.
How many guys are you taking a lap with? Three guys.
Three guys, I think, yeah. Or four guys,
maybe. So you're at 190 beats a minute, and you go, hey, boys, should we maybe not take a lap? And
Yeah, exactly. But worked out fine for Mark because he cleaned them up. But, yeah, it's an interesting...
And so they were sprinting amongst the pillow.
Yeah.
Didn't this happen in the crit you did in... I remember you telling me a story about this where, like Shanghai or something, a bunch of people took a lap, like lap the whole field.
Oh, that was in Hong Kong, yeah. But Mohorich, I was with Mohorich up the road, and it was just like this kind of exhibition criterium in Hong Kong at the end of the season. And I had to ride my bike for like 3 weeks, and we had to go because Green Edge was, you know...
I was at that one, I think.
Yeah, you were there, Jonesy.
Yeah, yeah, because I was thinking, shit, Billy might win a race here.
Exhibition race where they've arranged the winners, and he's just gone, yeah. Fuck yeah, I'm going for it.
No, it was full on. It wasn't arranged winners. It was a proper race. But we were just there because the team was trying to do a deal with this company in Hong Kong or something, and we were there, and Bahrain was there as well. And I think, was it a Lamprey then or something? I can't remember.
Yeah, Lamprey were there.
And then we took a lap, me, Mohorich, and about six or seven others. We lapped the field, but then we got away again. And then I remember Mohorich saying to me, like, he just looked at me and says, mate, you and I are the strongest two in this race. Let's just go again. And I was looking at him like, nah, bro, I'm not one of the strongest two in this race. I was on the fucking limit. I hadn't ridden for 3 weeks. I think we'd been on the piss the night before. And then he just went off and just took a lap again by himself. So he lapped the field twice. Yeah. Everyone else lapped the field. 10 of us lapped the field once.
How long was the lap? Twice.
Oh, like quite long, like
it was a couple of k's,
a k or something, yeah. K, 1.5 k or something. Mm. He was the only one who clearly was in any sort of decent condition, and I got spit.
Another thing.
12th, isn't it?
Another thing people want to know, Bills, is how's it all going now that it's official?
I could have ironed that
fresh,
shirt, didn't I?
A fresh DS straight out of the packet.
Why have they given you the... They've actually tailored that shirt, if you're watching on YouTube, with a picture of Sam. They've tailored it to have the DS gut, like for you to grow into a DS gut. Like, look how wide it flares out down the bottom.
Yeah.
They're like, it. Oh, he's still a bit lean, but he'll grow into it.
Mm. Yeah.
I feel like I'd fit it better this morning after last night.
So you literally ripped it out of a packet and chucked it straight on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Rich. To be fair, I did get that shirt 24 hours before that photo, and I just took no responsibility to sort it out. And I just put it in my room, still folded.
It looks like those first day of school photos, you know, when the kids at primary school get in front of the classroom. Remy's all right,
though. Remy's cleaned himself up.
He looks good, doesn't he?
Yeah. But how was the camp, Bills? Did you start saying, listen, guys, I know I'm only new, but I run a pretty tight ship. I don't take any shit. I'm not going to be all bogging down. And don't ask me what the fucking weather's doing. Find it out yourself. I'm here purely to get the best out of you guys, and it starts with a serious kick up the ass. Let's go. Is that sort of how it went down?
Nah.
Okay.
No, so I've joined Israel Premier Tech next year as a sports director, which is pretty... I'm pretty excited about that. Like, I've been working, having conversations with them for a few months, actually, and took the role on for next year. We had 3 days of meetings in Barcelona. I had the sports director's course the week before. It was actually a big 10 days for me. Like, I hadn't been in a classroom since I was at school, and half those times I was, you know, I was not really vacant in those classrooms. So I hadn't been in school for ages, and then like I had this 4 or 5 day course in Switzerland to get the sports director's license, which is actually like a lot more intense than I thought it was going to be. It was big days, like, you know, 9 till 5 in the classroom learning, and then an exam at the end of it. Finished that, drove back from Switzerland, and then a couple of days later went to Barcelona and met with the team. We had 3 days of meetings there planning for next year and stuff, and that was like, I was a bit nervous going in. I mean, I knew a couple of people in the team already, but essentially there was 18 of us there, and I knew 2 or 3 people. So I was meeting a whole bunch of new people, stepping into a whole new role, whole new job. Obviously, being a bike rider for so long, you know, kind of used to that. But it was a good few days meeting everybody. Great people, lots of ambitions. So next year is going to be really exciting. Looking forward to it, actually.
Did you have to do a test for the sports director's course?
Mm.
And if so, could you like saddle up to the bloke next to you, like high school, and go, "Hey, mate, that 3, it's B, isn't it?" It's like, no, it's C. It's like, yeah, no, I was just testing you. Just change it. Was it that sort of gear?
Yeah. We had 2 hours. So we had an exam at the end, which was 65 multi-choice questions. And that sort of sounds easy, multi-choice, because you think... But the answer's always in front of you with a multi-choice, you know? So I kind of thought, like, as long as you pay attention in the classrooms, which I had done, and the night before we had a little bit of a study group with myself, TJ Van Garderen, Sebastian Langeveld, a couple of other people. And so we had a bit of a study group, and I really felt like we were on top of it. I was like, oh, we all seem to be pretty good. And then I got into the exam, and it was in the middle of the Velodrome at the UCI Centre. So the UCI Centre is obviously where all the officers and the president and all that stuff work for UCI, but there's also a Velodrome there. And we're sitting in the middle of the Velodrome, so it's pretty cold. And
how many were you? How many people were you?
There was 90 of us.
So and how much did it cost for to sit this course?
1,800 euros. So yeah, you do the math.
Jeez.
Yeah. And if you fail, you've got to go back again and do the whole course again next year.
And pay another 1,800 euros.
Pay another 1,800 euros. So I didn't want to fail. But then, like I was saying, like multi-choice, we've done a study group the night before, and it feels like we're all on top of it. And then, and B, it's multi-choice. And the answer is always in front of you. So like, even if you don't, if you're not really sure, you'll see the answer. Go, oh, that's right. That's obviously the answer, mate. It was actually pretty hard. So we had 65 questions. You had to get 45 right. So you could only get 20 wrong, 70% pass rate. And I remember sitting in the exam, like, and the first question that came up, like, it's auto-generated. So I think that not everybody was getting the first question for me wasn't the same as the first question for the guy next to me. You know, it was like kind of random. And now remember,
oh, that's a good way to, that's actually a good anti-cheating
mechanism. Yeah.
It's all on iPads or something.
Yeah, on your computer.
You can Google it.
Yeah, I don't know. That was a thing. It's like they let you use a computer. So if you wanted to, you probably could have had something in front, like on your computer, like your notes or I don't know, and just done a little. I mean, they had people walking around and making sure you weren't cheating. And of course,
yeah, I think that's like, surely then, if you ever see some guy who's made it through as a director and doesn't know how to sign on a team,
yeah,
he's just been in the notes.
Yeah.
And also, it's a pretty rough start to your director's career if they go, we've just got word, Bewley cheated on his test. It's like,
you'd be playing a fucking risky game if you wanted to cheat in this exam. I think that, you know, it's not
what was the rarest thing. Like, is it like, as a rider in the peloton now, I've been pro 10 years, and I feel like I learn stuff all the time. Like, oh, you can't take a bottle there, it's too close to the finish line. You're like, oh, fuck, didn't know that.
And I mean, a lot of it was like rules and regulations. I mean, obviously we went through like how you, like you say, George, how you register a team for a race, how do you sign them on, it's manager's meeting, blah, blah, blah. But a lot of it was rules and regulations, where you got to drive the car, what the rules are with the punch when you're servicing a rider from the car, and yeah, bottle points, feed zones, blah, blah, blah.
But there please was also don't like, use bikes with motors, please.
Yeah. We did that. We did like a big segment with, so Mick Rogers actually, because he's the head of the road group, road cycling group, whatever you call it. What do you call that job, George?
No, he's safety.
Yeah, no, he's head of road as well.
Head of road, but it's like, it's a real, a lot of it is safety, but it's also innovation, changing the fucking measurements of the time trial bike and blah, blah, blah. So there was a couple of questions though, that like, you keeping in mind that you're doing an exam and you're doing a week of study to become a sports director. So there's a lot of things that are applicable to you and there's a lot of things that aren't. And one of the questions that I got in the exam, which stumped me, was does the UCI social media channels post highlights of UCI international races or something, calendar races?
What's that? It was like, the price of fish.
Yeah, it was like,
how's that going to help
you? It was like, one of the answers was no, men only, women only, men and women. All other categories. I was like, who the fuck knows? And who cares? Yeah, I'm a sports director. I couldn't give a shit what they're tweeting. You know?
Yeah. Out of curiosity, what was the answer?
Fucked if I know. But I got it wrong. I'm sure I did. Because I had no idea. I just went no. I clicked no. And then
I went. Well, I see the UCI highlights all the time. So I'm pretty sure it's. And then everybody. I
was like, sitting in lunch, I was like, that was stupid. I always see it. I follow them on Twitter and they're always posting highlights.
Yeah,
but it's the same. That's the equivalent of, you know, when you're doing your driving test and you get like the question, like, if you have a extra load on your trailer, how far does it have to overhang before it needs a flag?
Yeah.
That's the equivalent of that question.
Yeah,
nobody knows.
No,
and nobody knows the flag.
Exactly. There was a few questions that got me, like, and obviously with it being multi choice and the answer being in front of you, like I said, they try to trip you up, so they'll word the question in a way that's sort of confusing. And I mean, one of the other questions that sort of stumped me was, and I hadn't done an exam for 15 years and I wanted to pass, obviously, so I got like so into my own head, like I was just living rent free in my own head, you know, and started overthinking things. And like one of the questions was, do you, as a sports director, do you need to supply an hour-by-hour daily plan when you're at the race? And the answer was yes. There was only two answers, yes or no. And the answer was yes. You have to give the rider a plan for the day, you know, like breakfast at this time, suitcases at this time, leaving the hotel at this time, race start at this time. But I went so literal in my head. I was like, hour-by-hour? No, I'm not going to...
Yeah, that's my initial reaction just then was no, though, because they don't put in every hour.
Exactly.
Yeah, and is that a UCI regulation? Like, do you have to do that, or is that just a guide?
Yeah, you don't have to do it. There's no rule about that. But it's just, but we've done a class with a exports director, and Alain Golopan, actually. He was running
it. Gallo there.
Yeah, Gallo was running it. Fuck, it was funny. And then he was my first ever sports director when I was in Radio Shack. And now he was like teaching me, and he loved it. He was like making a real point about how he was now like my teacher, you know? And I was like, yeah, all right, mate, I get it.
Have you got your results back?
Yeah.
Are you still waiting on them? Oh, I was going to say, everything you were telling us, I was like, phew, if you haven't got your results back, I'd be sort of sweating a bit, mate.
I was, man. I was sweating for a week until I got my results, because when I left the exam, I finished the exam, and I had like 20 minutes left or something, and I'd gone over all the questions again. So I was like, fuck, I might as well use my time. So I went through the 20 minutes, and I went through every single answer, and I put a little bit of mark on it, put a mark on the piece of paper with the questions that I thought could be wrong. And I was telling Heppy this, actually. Heppy was like, yeah, but if you knew they were wrong, why didn't you change them? I was like, well, that's a good point. But I didn't know the answer. So I put a mark on the questions I didn't know the answer. So they could be right, they could be wrong. And you could get 20 wrong. And I had nine, I think I had nine that I was like, oh, I reckon these are wrong for sure. And then I had like another nine where I was like, oh, I'm not sure. So I was like, oh, we're fucking cutting.
Well, you made a really good point. If you're like, I know these are wrong for sure, then just change your answer to one of the other four options.
Yeah, yeah, I know. But it's a good
point. I'm not a smart man, but I know how to sports direct. Was there a ceremonial like on the last day? Everyone throws the hats in the air, like graduation, go out.
Like, because no one knows if you passed. Rip
snorer.
Like, oh, yeah. When I left the UCI Centre after this, we finished the exam. We all went to lunch, and I was driving back to Girona, and a lot of people were driving back to Belgium and driving back to wherever they've come from. And it was just this real bizarre feeling, like just sitting there, like, I don't know. I don't feel good about this. I reckon I might have failed.
If you failed, what had happened? That was your job, your contract with Israel ripped up.
No, I think you get a one year
grace
period, but in theory, you can't drive, or you have to be in the car with a license for 2 years.
Not much of a good sports route. No good as a sports route if you can't drive a car. Yeah. Do they run any simulators? They put you in the convoy and run a bit of...
Nah. And that was another thing that we were saying about, was that like, it was a week of learning to be a sports director by sitting in a classroom. So it was like it was all theory work for a practical job, you know, like...
That's actually the thing you need most, is like to get in a convoy and just have, you know, cyclists sitting a millimeter off your bumper going at 60k an hour as you're coming into a corner and going, right, do I commit to getting this car around the corner, or do I pull in, you know, brake before the corner, but if I brake too hard, they're going through my back windscreen.
They need like a Top Gear test lap circuit.
Yeah, exactly.
And obstacles the and then, yeah, the stick.
It'd be fun. It would have been fun as well. But no, it was just all in a classroom. It was kind of the equivalent of doing like a builder doing an apprenticeship in a classroom. At the end of it, you're like, okay, you can build a house, but he's never put a hammer on a nail.
Was the Astana director still there? You know, the guy that nearly killed the marshal at Tour of Britain? Was he just, has he just been forced to do like
they
five
used that video.
Years?
They showed that video as a, like a,
don't do this.
A reference to something. Yeah. Don't do this.
Did they show that video of when you didn't follow the protocol in Turkey and took the peloton down the wrong way?
That wasn't my fault.
So here's the example of where it can all go tits up.
There's a couple of videos. It was like, it was quite funny. They use this example, like in the social media classroom, they use this example of remember when Niels Eckhoff won the under 23 world title in Yorkshire?
Oh,
and mate, then it got
heartbreak
taken off
for that guy. That was heartbreak, eh?
Yeah, and then they took. So this Dutch guy won the under-23 world title in Yorkshire, and he had a crash, like 100k to go or something. He'd crashed, and he used his team car to motorpace back on, and he did. And to be fair, he motorpaced for a long time behind the car, which is not allowed at any moment. And then subsequently went on to win the race 3 hours later. But then they presented him with the rainbow jersey. He went on the podium. They said, world champion, Niels Eckhoff. They gave him the rainbow jersey. They gave him the medal. They did his national anthem, all that stuff. And then he came off the podium, and then they said, oh, no, you're disqualified, and took the jersey off him. And then he did a tweet saying like how he was upset and disappointed, rah, rah, rah. But it was like a it was actually like a really good tweet. And the way he worded it and stuff was like, it was really mature from like a 21-year-old who just had the rainbow jersey taken off him.
His manager did a tweet.
Yeah, his manager did a tweet, or somebody wrote it for him or something. But then in this class, they used it as an example of a bad thing to do. And everyone was like, but that tweet's great. Like, it's like a very, really well-written, mature tweet about how he's disappointed that he got the rainbow jersey taken off him. And they were like, you just don't want anyone to say anything bad about the UCI. Like, there's like 20 people just going at this lady. He's like trying to give us this course on social media. And that's probably why I didn't know the question about the highlights, because we just were like, just going like, yeah, but that's an awesome tweet. Like, good on him. Like, I want to use that as an example of what to write. Like, just like, she's like, oh, but no, like, don't say anything. We're like, oh, yeah.
Oh, jeez. Right. If they're sensitive about social media, they clearly don't watch the podcast.
No, exactly. No.
Just get your ticket, mate. I did an
interview once about UCI rider safety, and then like straight away got a phone call from UCI. Just basically pull your head in to stop criticizing.
And you haven't got their phone number. Like when it rings on an iPhone, it comes up like could be the UCI or whatever. You know how it's like your iPhone says that? Like might be or maybe UCI center or something. You're like,
uh-oh.
Hello? Bonjour?
That's a phone call you don't want to get, from the UCI. Yeah. That's never good news.
Nah. Principal's office. You don't want to see that come up. But anyway, it was a good week of learning. I was talking to Mick Rogers at dinner one night, and I said to him, like, to be honest, Mick, he asked me what I thought about the course. I said, honestly, it's really good. Like, this, I learned so much.
Could be cheaper.
Could be cheaper.
You really dug deep there, Mick, you know, particularly if you fail. But other than that, yeah, it's good.
I kind of said to him that, like, a good way to do it would be to, like, make it mandatory to come and do this course. But then at the end of the week, you get your license. You don't actually have to do a test to pass to get your license. Because, like I say, a lot of that stuff was like the social media thing, for example, was not really relevant to the job. But in the end, I passed, so it's fine.
Hey, you boys getting excited for the FIFA World Cup? I've got a real fire festival smell to it. It's already starting to circle.
Budweiser's not happy.
Oh, no.
That's a massive...
Oh, like, yeah.
What's going to happen there?
I saw this tweet. Yeah. I saw this tweet the other day that said some dude tweeted the Qatar and FIFA banning the sale of Budweiser is the first win for humanitarian rights or something.
Oh, and it was right at the death too. So like,
yeah. Oh yeah,
2 days out.
70. What was that deal worth? 70 million.
16 million every 4 years. So, and I think I've done quite a few World Cups, yeah.
But, like, think of the pallets of Budweiser that's just going to be sitting there now. Like, the wastage. You're thinking, like, that no one in Qatar's going to drink it. They have to send him straight back.
Yeah.
But then
like, a lot of... they were... You know, like, the fan videos, like, the content videos from the World Cup people when they, like, they go around, they're like... You know how it's like they try and get, like, colour from the crowd and they try and get, like, you know, like pick videos of people having fun and people celebrating and this and that. And they're trying to, you know, G up, like they'll see like a group of English people and they'll be like, all right, guys, like let's have a cheer for England. Blah, blah, blah. And then the English just going absolutely rogue and just teeing off at Qatar for not letting them drink in the stadiums. So it's just, they've got no publishable material.
Surely there's going to be some incidents. Like you think, You don't supply those British fans with like grog at the games. Like it's going to be worse than
if they're worried about drunk English fans. They need to be more worried about sober English fans.
Yeah,
sober angry
who want to drink. Fan.
Yeah, but even those athletes' villages, not athletes, the fans' villages, where people are going, oh, this is bullshit. You know, I paid $100 a night, and it's just a tent. There's no like aircon. But then other people are going, well, hey, mate, you've picked the cheapest option. And also, it's like, you go into the World Cup in Qatar. It's in the middle of a desert. And there's going to be a million fans. What did you expect? Like, did you expect it to be like lavish, five-star, aircon, when they're just going to knock this shit down anyway and going, geez, they've just gone all out here. Of course it's going to be churn and burn.
But then on the opposite end, if you want to buy it, you can drink... you can drink in the stadiums if you're in the corporate boxes or something, the VIP boxes. And it was 20, what was it? $22,000 a game or something.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you know you can't drink in any stadiums in Spain?
Yeah.
Really?
No, can't no drink alcohol in any, stadiums
in Spain. Oh, that's fair enough. They're rowdy enough.
I think a lot of it comes from, it's in all stadiums. So like, you know, football, basketball, whatever. But it obviously stems from football hooligans, I would assume, no? Trying to keep everyone a bit.
Sounds like it stemmed from Franco. I don't know. I don't feel like it was like a. I don't feel like there's hooliganism in Barcelona.
No, you can't. You can only drink Liverpool, drink Catalan stadiums, Spanish stadiums, but Catalan stadiums,
Catalan and Basque. Franco's just going.
Yeah. So who's your tip for the World Cup? New Zealand aren't there, so.
It's a good question. Hannah asked me the other day who I think is going to win, and. I don't have a straight answer.
Mate, don't have
Brazil,
a Scooby.
Maybe.
I'm gonna jump on the Poms back.
France,
get on the bandwagon.
France have got a good squad.
France, Brazil, Belgium,
Argentina.
Yeah.
Western countries. All right, guys. What do you reckon?
Oh, what I want to ask you, George, before you go. What do you think is going to happen with this Twitter takeover? Do you reckon it's going to go tits up?
I heard he's doing polls now. Polls to let Trump back on or not.
Yeah. He's back on.
Is he?
They've done it as an archive Twitter account, but all his old tweets are all on there. He's back.
Really?
Yep.
And that Andrew Tate as well, they let him back on.
Yeah.
Whoever the fuck that is.
Well, it's
isn't he the bowling coach of Pakistan?
Sean Tate.
That's a lot of cash if it crashes and burns.
I think he doesn't give a fuck. I think he's just gone. I think he's laughing. It's like I said, it's the same thing as Gwyneth Paltrow. Last week we were talking about like how she's actually candles. Just having a laugh. You know, that the whole thing's a hot, like selling candles that smell like her vagina and people going, oh, she's crazy, but I think she's just high. Like she must just be so flipped that she's just laughing at people buying them. And I think that's the same with Elon Musk. He's just, I think he's
you reckon it's going to work? You reckon he's going to turn it around?
I think he doesn't care if it works or not.
Yeah. And what is it? What do you mean by Twitter working? Like
it's a cesspit. It's a cesspit of the worst
people
humans.
Just writing something in 100
Twitter characters. People on Twitter, in my book, hanging out down the bottom with the grunters at the gym.
The stringlets.
I need to get new repertoire. I'm still running the whole routine from like 2012, Twitter and Facebook.
Yeah, you're old school, eh? You're like, oh,
I'm old school,
Instagram.
Man.
I'm like, no one uses Facebook.
Are you doing Facebook updates?
Like, no, well, I don't post anymore.
I learned at the UCI anymore. Course that Facebook is still the most widely used social media platform.
Really?
In the world.
It's because cycling fans are old.
Yeah. But I don't get on TikTok. I barely use Instagram. I need to freshen it up.
Do you know what's big at the moment, actually, is this new thing I came across called Be Real?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I haven't got it. So I've had a few people ask, do you want to be my Be Real? I just feel like they're inviting me to a prom or something. And it's like, and then they take a photo. And it's so you get a notification at some random point in the day, and it takes a front and back photo on your phone. So both cameras go off. So it's the whole idea is to be like, this is me being real. And you only have like 2 minutes to take it or something. And you have to suddenly take this photo. And then, so it's like, whatever you're doing at that moment right then, no makeup, no whatever. So it's to try and depict like the real life as opposed to the glamorized Instagram thing. But I think it just makes you, I think it's a bit of an own goal because it just makes you more addicted to your phone.
Yeah.
Who wants to see a photo of Bully on the can? Like,
I think it's like 90% people shitting. I honestly think that.
Do you guys ever get into Wordle?
Yeah.
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 That was good, eh?
Yeah. Is that dried up now? Everyone moved on from that?
I have, but Hannah still does it religiously every day.
Yeah. Wordle's good.
Yeah.
It's not social media, though.
No.
But it can be because you can share it if you want to.
Yeah.
But, oh, and before we go, I watched that Tour of Southland video last week, George.
What is that one? Yeah, I saw that in your notes. What is it?
When George flicked that rider and didn't wait when he crashed. And then I heard his interview afterwards when he was pissed off. And after seeing the vision, I was like, mate, you're lucky you didn't get belted. Like, he did try to choke you out after
on rewatching that stage. On rewatching that stage.
It's a dog act.
It's so funny how, like, how I envisioned that at the time. And then rewatching it going like, what was I up to? I
didn't slow down. Yeah. And then he said in the interview, he goes, you know, these riders in Europe, there's obviously different rules over there. It's real disappointing. I was like, man, he went soft on you.
But he was really good in the interview, but it was quite funny when you look back on it when he said, like, you know, like he named Rowley. He's like, oh, Hayden Rolston understands the, you know, the ethics after racing in Europe. But, you know, some guys obviously still got a lot to learn or, you know, but that, like when you, like, it's just funny when you, like, at this point of the, in your life and you look back on that and what you've done since then, you know, like one of the best bike riders to ever come out of New Zealand internationally. But like then it's so funny to see the evolution of a personal insight.
Cheeky little shit that just breaks all the protocol.
That video, those my arms. Where did that, how far out my arms stick?
And how long your hair was? Yeah, real long hair.
Real long hair running a big rat's tail.
And you had to go on the podium for some jersey and you just had this face of guilt, just like, like waving the hand, just going, get me off. Like it was a dog act.
Tough watch. Just being choked out on the line.
Maybe we could see it. Maybe we should put that video up. Maybe we can.
Let's clip it up.
Yeah. Well, otherwise,
that was a real tough watch for me, though. I struggled to watch that.
I just watched it because I was just enjoyed watching some old school cycling footage. Like I watched the whole
thing. What was Bauer up to?
Yeah, I know. He went on the Hail
Mary. Just head out 20K to go.
Yeah.
Jeez.
He looked young as well. He was national champ at the time, wasn't he?
He was so strong. Or he is so strong. But he was much stronger than anybody else back then.
It was. Anyway. And then what about Rowley? Like, he just rode as hard as he could from the bottom to the top. Like, there was just no tactics. He just started riding that was real hard. From the bottom.
Tourism was the equivalent of, it's a cycling equivalent of playing like village cricket.
Yeah,
it's like, or park cricket in Australia, you know, it's like no one knew what we were doing. Everyone was attacking everybody, talking about unwritten rules when, you know, it was like we'd heard this myth of unwritten rules in cycling. Like it was kind of like the fashionable thing to do, like talk about unwritten rules and panache and this. It was like, mate, we don't even know the real rules. Let's fucking stop worrying about the unwritten ones.
Yeah, it's grassroots cycling. Just fucking get on with it, eh? Like, let's be honest, it's a Tour of Southland, which is a great race, but it's back. Like, it's grassroots cycling. Just fucking race. Like,
we'll have to put on the socials that video, Bills.
Yeah.
People can have a look.
I got Christmas today. It's Christmas today in our household.
Yeah?
And, yeah, so we've got this tradition we've been doing for about 8 years. Just, like, six or eight of us that do, like, this, like, early mid-November Christmas, and we always go and stay at our friend's house out of town. We've done it for years. So today,
we started that at the Barca pad.
Yeah, essentially Sunday. Started from the Barca pad in some ways. And then, like, so we go out there, out to our friend's house, and I go out there this afternoon at 3 o'clock, and everyone's been designated a meal. They've got to cook and all these different courses, and I think Durbo's on the wine pairings and all these things. And so, and we all stay out there. That's so it'll be a big night. But it feels like Christmas for me because in New Zealand, whenever I'm home for Christmas, is you go to the pub Christmas Eve and catch up with all your mates you haven't seen for the whole year. And you get absolutely hammered at the pub. And then you wake up Christmas morning hungover as fuck and you got to sit through a whole day with the family. And I feel exactly like that. I feel like I've got a hangover. I've got to go to Christmas in a few hours. I don't know if Hannah's even really talking to me today because I said I'd be home at 8:30 and I got home at 1:30. She cooked dinner.
I like how he's back using the podcast as therapy sessions again.
You started this. When you came on this morning, deep. You were halfway through a domestic, eh?
Yeah.
I could see you were rattled and you were sheepish.
I went to give her a cuddle this morning. She just was like, fuck off. He just got out of bed. I was like, ooh.
Hey, it'll be a Christmas miracle, mate.
Yeah.
By tonight, you'll be sitting around drinking eggnog, singing Mariah Carey songs.
I'm firmly in Anna's camp. I'm firmly in Hannah's camp on this one.
Oh, yeah. Me too. Like, there's only one person who's fucked up here, and it's not her. But you can't rewind the clock, unfortunately, so I've got to find a way out of it.
You got about a couple of hours to patch it up before.
Yeah.
Problem is, get a Sunday, nice present. It's closed. You can't go and what are you going to do? Pull some flat, like nothing's open.
I don't know.
Very hard to pull it back on a Sunday.
Look forward to the update. All right.
Yeah. Tune in next week. Sam back on Tinder.
Doing lockdown videos.
Yeah, lockdown videos. Here we go.
Oh, fuck. God.
I could not handle if Hannah leaves you, I'm leaving. I can't handle you. I couldn't handle you again.
Nah.
Mm. Nah.
Nah, I wouldn't. I hope that it won't come to that. But I'll let you know. We'll report back in a couple of weeks. I bought a new golf club the other day, Jonesy.
Did you?
Yeah, I bought a 4-wood.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, bit of a random club, but it's good.
Do us a video next time you do a round on how to shoot triple bogeys. Like, just take us through, like, an average hole.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've got to shoot one to be able to do that.
Oh, I'll shoot
one for you.
All right,
boys. All right, mate. Like, share, subscribe. Oh, before you go, leave a review too. We had a look at the reviews on iTunes. We've got a lot of 5 stars, but there's a couple of 1 stars, Bules, that are in there. Clearly, people that were pissed off. They're people that have got vendettas.
I'd love to know what we did to get a 1-star. Like, I know
there's people that don't like us.
It has to be someone who's watched the show and just gone. Fucking
disgrace. Like, 1-star is like, this is terrible.
Yeah.
This is the worst podcast I've ever heard. And some shows, warranted.
Yeah.
But they average it out.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Give us a 3 or something.
Yeah.
Most of those 1-stars have come from me.
There's a review on there from George saying, hate recording this, let alone listening to it.
So if you can do us a solid, just try and iron out those 1-stars. And give us plenty of 3s.
There's a comment from George saying, never listened to the show, but I bet it's shit. I hate recording it.
Yeah.
Oh, Williamson just got out. Oh, no, Conway's out. All right.
Watch this. Subscribe.